Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH at 96.5 TIC. This morning on Face Connecticut, we are going to be speaking with State House Speaker Matt Ritter to get the Democratic response to how the 2025 legislative session went in Connecticut. We recently spoke with Republican Senate Leader Stephen Harding on the show, and as we do at the end of every legislative session, we speak with both sides to get perspectives on how things went at the state capitol. Speaker Ritter, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
There have been many people who have been critical of some things that happened in the 2025 legislative session, and I'm sure that we're going to be getting into that. But as I started with Senator Harding, I have this question for you. What are some successes that you're proud of from this year's legislative session?
Yeah, and by the way, if there weren't any criticisms of the session, then it would be bizarre, right? There's decisions that have to be made, and so there's always people will feel one way or another, but let's talk about some of the major successes. It was the largest investment in childcare in the state of Connecticut's history. We're going to put close to $300 million in a trust fund so that we can, on using interest in the future, if we continue to make payments to this fund, provide free childcare for families with incomes under $100,000, and then subsidies up beyond that for even middle class families beyond that. That's a remarkable achievement. There's nothing like it in the country, to my knowledge. Child care is so expensive, and it prevents people from going back to work. This will give families options that they don't have now and get our kids immersed earlier, perhaps. And I think that will have an impact on education starting in kindergarten if kids are more prepared. The second thing is large increases to Medicaid. People have been talking for a long time about the need to put more money into our Medicaid program so that we can pay our workers more who work at nursing homes and pay our providers more who see low-income patients for dental care and health care screenings. When we get matches from the federal government dollar for dollar, and no matter all the stuff they're talking about in Washington doesn't change that formula. So by putting in close to, $75 million of state money over the next 2 years, we get a match from the feds for $75 million. That's a massive achievement and very proud of it. And I think energy prices. We passed a bipartisan bill this year. We heard a lot of complaints and noises. People will see some stabilization in their bills and their rates. And we're trying to change consumer behavior as well. We got to educate each other about the right time to run the dishwasher in July, because in a lot of states they've been able to drive costs down by changing behavior a little bit. I think that would help here. And this bill is a really good start, I think, to make some of those changes.
Speaker Ritter, one thing that Democrats have celebrated, or at least many Democrats have celebrated in this legislative session, is HB 5002, the housing bill that was passed. But that itself has been controversial, and now the controversy has been continuing after the legislative session has ended. Here we are approaching the end of June. It's not clear what Governor Lamont might do with the bill. He's suggested possibly a veto, taking it as is with a promise it would be revised later on down the road. What's your understanding of where that bill stands at this point in time?
It's still in flux. I have spoken to the governor and governor's chief of staff several times in the last couple of days, and certainly House Majority Leader Jason Rojas, who really took the lead in our chamber on drafting this bill. It's touch and go at this moment. I think there are changes that can be agreed to. And we'll just have to see if that gets the governor there. But the bottom line is there's a lot in this bill that I think will make a positive impact. And, I've read the emails and the complaints from some, and I think that there are some sections that can be changed to maybe answer some of those concerns. But I hope we can get there because it's a really important piece of legislation. Again, very proud of my colleague and good friend, the majority leader, for working so hard on that.
Are you surprised to see some of the backlash to the housing bill? For example, something that I just saw the other morning, it's called CT 169 Strong. It seems to come out of New Canaan, although I, for one, saw this shared in a Cheshire Facebook group, so it is making the rounds, and it's calling on Governor Lamont, people to sign this petition for him to veto HB 5002, the housing bill, and it lists seven bullet points, and the first one is towns and cities can no longer require apartment buildings under 24 units to provide parking for tenants. So number one, does this response surprise you? And number two, how do you address some of these concerns like the one I mentioned there?
It does not. I mean, housing has been an issue for a long time, right? And it's, you know, Connecticut has some restrictive zoning policies compared to other states. Some people like those restrictive zoning policies. I think the argument that we're trying to make is we do need to create more housing. Question is, how do you do it? And yes, the parking thing has been an issue. Look, it was an issue in our caucus. We had a few people who had a problem with it. I believe that that's one of the changes that folks are willing to look at that language and agree to. So, you know, the point is the governor has raised these concerns, and we're trying to meet him to get there to have the bill signed. Yeah.
Meanwhile, New Haven Mayor Justin Ellicker released a statement as to why he supports this bill. And he says that the bill represents one of the most meaningful steps forward that our state government has taken in years to support housing growth. But my question for you, Speaker, is there a difference between a town like New Canaan and Cheshire versus a city like Hartford, or in this case, Mayor Ellicker's New Haven? Is this bill too big?
You know, and I appreciate Mayor Ellicker's statement on that. Look, I will say this, right, that there is no one-size-fits-all approach. And so one of the goals of this bill is to sort of try to incentivize municipalities to think about ways to do it. The most common thing you'll hear is transit-oriented development, right, trying to build around train stations. Darien is a great example of that. If you go down there, they have a bunch of new units by their train station. Because, again, we got to have units available for younger people, senior citizens who are moving out of their homes, teachers, firefighters, police officers. You know, we want folks to live in the communities they serve, and we want to have, you know, the ability to let people not have to get in a car and go to New York City or go to Stanford to work. So we got to think through this stuff. I would say that this bill addresses a lot of those concerns, and I think Jason moved pretty far, but you're tackling a major issue, and so it's not surprising there's still complaints and concerns. I do understand that. And like I said, I hope we can get there. The governor has made some comments, and we're working through it.
If this were to go to a special session, the housing bill particularly, what would that look like in general? Do you expect that it would be a quick fix? Do you think that this would be something that would have lawmakers at the Capitol longer? What would that process look like?
So a special session is always tricky because you probably have other things that will get taken up. If we go in September, for example, and we have a federal budget that's been done, right, we've talked about maybe needing to respond to some of the cuts that they may make to SNAP or Medicaid, for example. So a special session can often, like a plant, start small and grow. There are also a handful of bills that died in the last hours of session that I don't like to use special session to relitigate issues that I considered overly partisan, or the governor wasn't there, or one chamber wasn't there. I think, you know, that's an end around. But I do get disappointed when there are bills that pass one chamber overwhelmingly, let's say 147-3 in the House, and then die on a calendar, or 35-1 in the Senate and die in the House. And I might be willing to revisit some of those types of bills. You know, there are some people who take out personal grievances, I know this may shock listeners, on each other that last 2 days, and that's not good for public policy or the institution. So, you know, there could be other bills that get addressed. If it's to speak to the housing bill, yes, my understanding is if there was the governor were to sign it, there'd be a handshake agreement and written language that we would show the public that would be taken up in a special session. The effective date of most of the housing bill is October 1. So if you did it prior to that, those laws would never come into effect and would be amended prior to the effective date, if that makes sense.
So would the special session for the housing bill have to take place in June, or are you saying that it could be maybe July or August?
It have to be before October 1. It would have to be then. I think we're looking at either July or September. And, you know, look, the reality is if we did it in July, there'd be a lot of people unable to attend because they're going places, they're going away. So we'd have to do a vote count and see where attendance was.
I'm also glad that you mentioned September as a possible time frame for a special session. And I say that because that has been floated around a number of times, even before the end of the session, that maybe if we get a better picture of what's going to go on with federal spending cuts, perhaps a session in September would be necessary. Is that something else that you would expect to be taken up maybe at the same time as the housing bill?
We're going to take a look at it. OPM is going to put a report out for the legislature to look at what they believe the federal cuts are to date, and then what may come from any bill they pass down there. And then we'll have to go through it as a legislature. You know, what I would say to folks is Connecticut is not able to fully backfill federal cuts. At some point, we don't have the resource to do that. No state does, if they're billions of dollars. But Connecticut does have some resources. We put about $600 million to $1 billion aside as part of this bipartisan, as part of this biennium budget to address it. So we'd have some means to address some stuff, but we'd have to prioritize and triage and hope that in 2 years, you know, maybe Congress would revisit it if there was a change and Democrats took over the House or Senate.
As far as that extra money, do you think that the budget that you guys did pass would have to be revised, that there would be cuts elsewhere in order to find some extra money? Or are you looking specifically at the extra money, the rainy day money that the state has?
Yeah, it would be the latter, I think. I mean, could there be some minor adjustments to a budget? Sure. I mean, you'd have to look at everything. But most of this would be appropriate out of what we sort of have two, you know, my notion is we have about a $4.2 billion budget reserve fund that is going to go to about $5 billion by the fall. And the delta between that 4.2 and 5, that ballpark number of 600 to 800, is what we would prioritize for backfilling federal reductions. We don't want to touch sort of the main $4.2 billion budget reserve fund, not quite yet. You know, that's really meant more for a recession or things like that. And we think we can do a lot of, you know, mitigating the federal cuts with that $600 million that I mentioned, as opposed to going into that 4.2.
As we speak at the moment, Speaker Ritter, I have to mention that we have the problem going on in Iran, between Israel and Iran, and whether or not the United States will be getting involved and to what extent they'll be getting involved. Now, granted, that's at the federal level, but as far as Connecticut is concerned, or Connecticut's spending is concerned, do you see any direct or immediate impact from any escalated conflict between the United States and the Middle East, Iran?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's not my world. The president and his advisors will have to make a decision on what they think is best for the country. Obviously, anytime, though, you have wars, this is true of Russia and Ukraine, you worry about oil prices, right? You worry about the economy, you worry about a potential recession. So, yeah, those are things that could trickle down to us. But, you know, I'll leave it to Senator Murphy and others from our delegation who do a wonderful job to make the best determinations, they think, for our country and our national security.
For those of you just joining in on Face Connecticut this morning, I am Morgan Cunningham, and he is State House Speaker Matt Ritter. I want to draw your attention to the labor bill that passed out of both chambers, but Governor Lamont is promising a veto on that particular bill. This would be the second year, correct, that he has said that he would do that. Does that surprise you that he has been unwavering on the matter?
I'm not surprised he's going to veto it. You know, look, we have tried very hard to find a compromise here. I want people to understand what we're talking about here. Workers that go out on strike, you know, some will call it governmental involvement or intervention. The issue becomes, take workers that collectively bargain and go on strike who are making, you know, $21 an hour at a nursing home. To go on strike and have no money could lead to them unable to pay rent, unable to pay, you know, for expenses for their children, health care. And so it's really hard to strike in that instance, right? I mean, people focus on Pratt and EB, but, you know, in some cases, those folks are better paid and maybe better prepared to handle, say, a 7 to 10 day strike. So we've been trying to find a way to make sure that if somebody goes out and, you know, makes their point, that they don't lose their home or lose their apartment. And we've had different iterations of how to do this. The bottom line is government often supports people for a short time to help them get back on their feet and sustain them. And there's tons of government programs that benefit Republicans and Democrats to do that. We just haven't found the sweet spot with Governor Lamont on it yet. And, you know, we'll keep working on it. But he certainly has drawn a line at the unemployment notion from the workers' compensation fund. And not workers' compensation, I'm sorry, the unemployment fund for striking workers. And, you know, we're not there yet. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the future with it.
Do you think that there might be a path forward in the future?
You know, we passed a bill 2 years ago that I thought would have worked. It was the government. We had some federal dollars that we put aside to help workers in certain instances with health care or housing costs. And no one seemed that opposed to that, right? I mean, people sort of understood that we don't want anybody at any time to not be available, because the average worker who gets unemployed gets unemployment, and they get half of what their salary was for, like, you know, cover a certain number of weeks. And that's just to keep them on their feet and keep health care and keep them in their home or whatever until they get another job. And so people, I think, were okay with that concept, and the governor vetoed that one as well. And maybe we have to go back to looking something like that, where there'd be some state emergency programs available for certain workers. And, you know, maybe we can get our arms around that. I don't know. We'll have to keep thinking about it.
And one other question, Speaker Ritter, on the labor bill in particular. It did happen near the end of the session. I remember watching it on CTN. It took some time. And one of the other criticisms that came up was that this was an inefficient use of time because it was expected Governor Lamont wouldn't sign the bill anyway. Is there any advantage politically, at least to the Democrats in the Senate and House, to taking up the bill and passing it? Does it make sense?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, the hardest part of my job, and probably Marty Looney's as well, is time and allocating time to different bills and priorities. As a general rule, I don't prefer putting bills on the floor of the House that the governor has told me privately and has told the world publicly he's going to veto. And remember, the bill on striking workers was very, very different in 2024. It was a very different concept. So this particular version of the bill has never had a vote in the House. And, you know, I had enough members who said, look, we'd like to do it. It was only about 4 hours, if I recall. It wasn't a terribly long debate. We've had much longer this year. And it was sort of one of those things where there was strong advocacy, and I felt like it was time to give that an opportunity. It had been the third year it had not gone. You know, that would have been a third year in the House it didn't go. But I did acknowledge to friends who really supported the bill and colleagues that, you know, a veto of this version, right, is a setback, because it would be a little harder to make the argument that next year you got to bring the same bill back. And I was pretty upfront about that. So, you know, it is what it is. And allies don't always agree on things. And I had, you know, to make that decision. But I was glad that the folks for whom this is a very passionate issue got their day on the board, so to speak.
Speaking of bills that don't always make a comeback, Aid in Dying is one that stood out to me as not really getting traction in 2025, but did and got closer in 2024 and in past sessions before then. What's the future of that concept, that bill for Connecticut? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I support the bill. I do. I think that there is, as long as there's medical intervention and doctors involved, I do. It's a hard bill because there's no natural easy coalition. My caucus is very split on it, and so is the Republican caucus. There are Republicans in favor and Democrats, and then people who are very opposed. So it's a very hard issue to vote count. It has had a hard time in the Judiciary Committee over the years. The makeup of that committee just is what it is. So it's a hard one. Yeah, I think it will pass someday in Connecticut. I do. But one of my main jobs is to be a good vote counter, and I think I've gotten pretty good at that over the years and can tell you with pretty good accuracy where things will land. And Aid in Dying is a tough one to nail down.
A little more clear cut this time around, the bear hunt bill, but still ended up dying in the process near the end of the legislative session. It did get pretty close, didn't it, Speaker?
Yeah, the bill was not exactly a bear hunt. What it was DEEP would promulgate regulations and submit them to the legislature and on what they'd recommend. Look, I love animals. I love my golden doodle, and I love animals and appreciate them. I will say, though, that it's scary. Like in Hartford, where I live, we have bears roaming around Farmington Avenue pretty regularly. And then when I go jogging into West Hartford, every week I'm told there's a bear in the park, Elizabeth Park or something like that. It's hard, and some people are very used to bears and comfortable, and there's others who it's just a complete panic attack, and I get a lot of emails about this. At some point, there's going to come a moment where we have to have a better strategy in Connecticut. And if that means sterilization, if that means relocation, if that means, you know, better trash cans that are bear-proof, I talked about that. If you go to the parks in Hartford, the trash cans are wide open. They don't even have lids on them. And if you go to western parts of the country, they have bear-proof trash cans. So the state's going to have to make a decision. Is that a hunt? I don't know. But there was definitely more support for a hunt this year than any year that I've been there, because there's just so much more interaction between bears and humans. And it's mostly human behavior that causes it. I agree, you know, putting out bird feeders, and I mentioned the trash can issue. But I do worry someday there's going to be a really bad interaction from somebody who may not know what to do with a bear, or a bear with a cub that feels threatened. And then it's going to put a lot of pressure on lawmakers.
And the pizza bill didn't come up this year either. I've asked you that now. This is the third year in a row.
Yeah. I mean, look, some people get really passionate about it, and it did not come up this year. But Connecticut does have great pizza. I agree with everybody on that.
One other thing that many people had observed or had conspiracy theories about, are there considerable disagreements? Are there tensions between you and the governor?
There are not. But do we have disagreements? Sure. You know, the governor understands, I think, my job is different than his, right? He can think in his own mind what he wants to see. And I have to thread a needle along with the majority leader for 102 people with very diverse views. The disagreements are not personal. But it's funny, you know, I get accused sometimes of the opposite, of being too close to Governor Lamont and too willing to accommodate his concerns. So as always in my job and the fifth year doing it, you know, sometimes I'm too moderate. Sometimes I'm too liberal. Sometimes I'm too nice to the governor. Sometimes I butt heads with the governor. And the answer is probably that I'm doing my job right if I have people saying both things, because I think it depends on the issue. But when it came to the budget, I definitely pushed hard. I acknowledge that. And I give the governor a lot of credit because he moved. He did move. And I needed that, though. It wasn't butting heads to butt heads. It wasn't to pick a fight or a disagreement. I told him the truth. I can't get a vote in my caucus if I don't have more money for Medicaid and more money for special education and a child care trust fund. We got to a child tax credit this year for the first time in state history outside of the ARPA one we did a few years ago. So I told him those things, and I'm not sure at first that maybe he knew how serious I was, but as the session went on, I think it became clear, and he moved a lot. And I would just say that our relationship is quite cordial, but yeah, we're not always going to agree, but I have a job to do and he's a job to do.
There have also been people thinking about what might happen in 2026 in Connecticut. Does Governor Lamont seek a third term? Lately, he seems to be leaning toward a yes, or that at least he's strongly considering it, but hasn't made a decision one way or another. But there are also other Democrats. Your name has come up, too. People who might one day be interested in higher office. What's on your mind for 2026?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. Your question was, you know, butting heads. Well, as I've said, I mean, the governor, if he runs for re-election, he has my full support. He'll have my endorsement. You know, I have a great job. The Speaker of the House is, I believe, probably one of the top two or three jobs you can have in the state in terms of political influence and power. It also gives you the ability to go home for the summer and be with your family and be a lawyer and work, as opposed to making it a full-time job. It's a very unique thing. So if the last job I ever had was this, no one should feel sad for me. I have a wonderful job. If things open up, I'll look at them. But I will tell you, there's probably only a handful of jobs that would interest me at this point in my life. It's probably not in Washington, D.C. So we'll see what happens. But if the governor runs again, and he knows he has my support, and I think he's done a great job. And I know some Democrats are not happy with him, but he has a similar job that I have, right? He's trying to weave a different constituency than maybe someone who lives in a very blue district. And that's what I try to do. I try to accommodate Eastern Connecticut Democrats and Fairfield County Democrats and urban Democrats, and it's a challenge at times.
Well, Speaker Ritter, it's always a pleasure talking with you. I know we don't always get the chance, although we do this every year, it seems, so we'll have to do it again next year. Any final thoughts?
No, I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you interviewing Senator Harding as well. I think he and I, again, have a very good relationship. We don't always agree on everything, but it's important for listeners to hear both sides, and they can make decisions based on that.
All right. Well, we'll do it again next year. What do you say?
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.